The Colorado Business Roundtable unapologetically tells the story that business is a force for good in our community, featuring conversations with thought leaders from academia, business, community, and government. Welcome to A Seat at the Table with Debbie Brown.
Thanks for joining us today on this episode of A Seat at the Table with Debbie Brown. And I'm Debbie Brown, president of Colorado Business Roundtable. And we're pleased to bring guests to the forefront that represent academia, business, community, and government that really make our state better in all ways, economic, personal, opportunity, and issues of the day that really affect the business community. Today, I'm really pleased to bring in to talk with Diana Higuera, who is the executive director and founder of Rossi Mountain Welcome Center. And she's got a great story in understanding, especially the current environment that we have going on with migrants and folks immigrating here to Colorado specifically. She's not new to this. This is an area where she has a personal and professional passion. So, Diana, welcome to the podcast today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, you bet. I think we met through a mutual friend, and I was really intrigued by your story and what and the impact you're having here in Colorado. So before we talk a little bit more about Rocky Mountain Welcome Center, tell me a little bit more about your story, your personal story, how you ended up here today.
I came to do my master's degree. I'm originally from Venezuela. I looked all over the world and ended up coming to the University of Denver. They had a great program that is international and intercultural communication. So I was supposed to come for 2 years. I met my husband in the first class. He is an American and Boulder Ellerian.
He's that like an extra bonus, right? That you didn't expect.
Yes, that I come to do my MRS, and I said, no, it was the other way around. You wanted to get your MR. So.
And then tell me more after that, after you started studying here, a little bit more about your journey.
My journey of working with immigrants was, it's very, very personal because when I came as an international student. And at DU, at that time, the iHouse will help more the students going abroad than the international students coming. So there were a lot of things that as an international student, you don't know. You don't know that the apartments are not furnished, for example. And I ended up sleeping in the floor for the first 2 weeks. Or you don't know, the university tells you, yeah, go onto this website and see if you can find a roommate. And then as an international student, you have never been here and you think, what about if that person is a serial killer? You know, like you don't really know. So it ended up happening that a lot of international students were sleeping the first day at the airport because they didn't know how to get to Denver, or that they were going to a housing that was not open at the time they would come in, and they would ended up sleeping in one of the classrooms for the first night. So I started all this movement of lobbying the International House and all the organizations within the university to help international students come in. And then on my first job that was at the Conflict Center, I was working a lot with the programs in Spanish. And when you do programs in Spanish, it's not only about translating the program that you have in English to Spanish, but you have to put context to it. Because there is a lot of things that just by translating, it doesn't make sense in the culture of the people that you're teaching to. So you have to change the curriculum to something that makes sense to the people. And that's how I got deeper and deeper into helping immigrants or refugees and ended up just switching overall to work with immigrants and refugees.
So. It's interesting to think about your story. I was reflecting on a time when my oldest daughter was in Korea for a year teaching English. And she showed up at the airport and her phone didn't work, her SIM card didn't work. And she's basically this young American in a foreign land and was hoping somebody would find her, you know, her ride. But she really didn't have a way of knowing who they were, what they looked like, if they were going to show up. And it all kind of worked out, but you can imagine, you know, I'm over here in America worried about her. But I think until people have lived that experience, you know, they don't realize there's a complexity there of making sure, in your case, as an international student, you know, how you would, you know, just jump right in. There's got to be a little bit of a more bandwidth going back and forth.
Yeah. And especially there are a lot of things that you have to do with Social Security number and as an international student, you don't have the social security number right away. So how do you get a phone? How do you get electricity going on in the apartment? And a lot of things that people don't really think about until you are in those shoes.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you've given some good input to BU, and it's an interesting mix. We represent as well university systems with Colorado Business Roundtable. It would be interesting to think about how they're navigating that as they want foreign students to come because it enriches everybody in those academic institutions. But how do they make sure that experience really, really is a wonderful experience for the students as well?
And with undergrad students, because they're so young and they go into the dorms, the first years are not as much as an issue as a grad students that are the ones that come on their own.
Yeah. So what led you to be the founder of Rocky Mountain Welcome Center, and what is it?
I was executive director at the time of another nonprofit, the Aurora Welcome Center, and the Aurora Welcome Center closed and merged into a different organization. And it was still a lot of gaps into the helps that you can give to immigrants, especially hard-to-reach populations. And that's what I decided. There is so much to be done. And the chair of my board at that time was the one telling me, you have to do this. You have to continue. And I'm like, I need my salary. I don't want to do this. But it seems that everything aligned to the point where, okay, I'm doing this and see how it goes. And we do work with immigrants and refugees. We work with hard-to-reach populations, and with populations that nobody is helping because they're highly educated or because they're not educated at all, and it's very hard to work with them. And so we are an organization that we do things from the ground up. All our staff are immigrants and refugees themselves, or first generation, and they are in the communities themselves. So we know what are the gaps that we need to fill, what are the needs that we're seeing on the ground, and that's how we inform our programs. So right now, for example, our newest program is the TPS program. It's a temporary protection status that is given to some immigrants. In this case, the latest ones are Venezuelans and the ones that arrived before July 31st, and we are helping to process all the TPS for the people that get the TPS.
And Diana, before we jump into kind of current day, this is something you've been doing, you know, before there was really sort of this migrant crisis that people are hearing about, you know, the surge at the border. You've been working with Rocky Mountain Welcome Center way before that. Isn't that right? And,
yes.
And so, yeah. And then I want to kind of get to, okay, now what's going on now? But what were some of the ways you were meeting the gaps back when it was perhaps simpler, when the flow was a little different? And maybe that's not the right way to say it. I think I look at immigration as one of the most polarizing political issues to some degree. It's been politicized, I believe, by, you know, really both sides of the political aisle. And with the roundtable, we really are trying to find a lane where we bring employers to the table to talk about workforce solutions. How do we view modernized immigration strategies as a way to make our country stronger and more strategic, like bringing employers into the table and maybe trying to not have it be such a political issue? But fill us in on your work in the past, and then I'm going to pivot to sort of current day and what's top of mind as people are reading the headlines.
It is not as simple. I think that there are waves of different migrants or immigrants are coming to the country. So right now are the migrants that we're seeing, but before was the ban on some of the immigrants coming, or was hard on reunifying families. So I started the organization in 2017. And some of the programs that we started with were programs that were very basic. For example, or kindergarten prep, that is to prepare children 3 to 5 to go to kindergarten. And that started from me or us working with kids at the Plaza programs with the public libraries, the Denver public libraries, and seeing the difference of the kids that I was seeing in the ground and my own kids and what were the gaps. So where my own kids were going to daycare and preschool and they knew how to write already or how to hold a pen, And then I have these kids in the library that didn't know how to hold scissors or how to cut a paper. That is so simple gets them behind when they get to kindergarten. So when they get to the first part of the school, they're already behind. And we didn't want to see that. And that's how we started our kindergarten prep program. That was our first program. So we also have other programs that are educational for kids. For example, we saw in different ways that our kids, our immigrant kids, were behind in literacy. They were not reading to their peers' level. And we had this magnificent program that was come from another nonprofit that was closing. And we inherited that program. They were very successful with American kids. And we thought, well, if with American kids, they're having this program that will, in 4 weeks, they will go up on a level of reading of 4 weeks, then maybe for us, it will be less. And then suddenly we have kids that in 4 weeks, they improve a year and a half in reading.
Wow, that's stunning. Yeah.
Yes. And we didn't know. At the beginning, we said, well, you know, because the English is not good enough, then the reading levels. And the thing is that reading translate the skill, translate from language to language. So these kids knew how to read and write in their own languages. They just needed to improve their English. And as they were improving their reading, they were improving their English. So their jump was huge. So All these programs we were starting to do. And because we are such a small organization, we could respond to what was happening very, very quickly. So, for example, during COVID, we saw a lot of small organizations, of small businesses that were closing. And we created a program that was a food program. It was a culturally appropriate food program where we went to small restaurants, ethnic restaurants, for them to do food, and we will give it away to the immigrant populations. So that will help the restaurant to not close during COVID and will help us to do culturally appropriate food to give away during the time that people need it.
I love that, kind of a perfect win-win, really, that serves you know, like you said, the business entity and the people who are in need. Yeah, give us a sense to tell us what it was like that you talked a little bit about the beginning, a little bit about COVID time, which you and I have spent some more time on. How are things now? You know, you just can't go a day without reading a headline about Denver in particular and the suburbs of Denver facing the number of migrants that are coming, the asylum seekers. You know, it's really at a level that's unprecedented. How has your organization jumped into that, if you have?
Yeah, we do. We are working on the mental health part. So we are doing mental health groups in the shelters, which is of a challenge because the people in the shelters are only right now maximum for a 41-day with if their families and if they're singles, they have only 15 days to be in the shelters. So the groups are not very consistent. But they do need all the psychological help that we can give them because these are people that have come walking for maybe a year with their kids. And through the jungle on through a lot of huddles. So they have seen, you know, kidnaps, rapes and all deaths, all what nobody should be seeing in their lifetime. And that creates a lot of trauma. So right now we have 4 mental health professionals going into the shelters 2 times a week right now in each of the shelters and providing groups. And we have also clothing. We have been doing clothing drives, and we have jackets and shoes and everything for winter that we have been also providing in the field and providing to other organizations that are also providing things in the field. So it takes a village. It's not only us. There are a lot of older, smaller organizations helping. And I think that's something that's great from Colorado, that we have so many good nonprofits that are trying to do the job in the field.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the collaboration really sets Colorado apart. And tell me more about that as far as how you collaborate with other partners for sort of this collective impact. And I love that you're actually looking for what are the gaps that you need to fill, as opposed to there's plenty of needs out there. And it's interesting, how do you determine what those gaps are, but then have that collaborative spirit as well?
We try to collaborate with organizations that are already doing a good job. And I don't believe in recreating things that are already working. I believe in collaborating with other people. So, for example, English is not such a thing as enough English providers. So if I would have English, that would be great. We don't, but, you know, that would be something that we would jump in. But there are other things that we can collaborate. We have a group of people that provide what we call care. And that is, so someone comes with us with a need. And if we don't have the possibility to do it in-house, we look for which is the organization who is doing that we can refer them to. And that is one way that we collaborate. Another way of collaboration that we're doing, for example, is there is this organization that is working directly in the shelters, and they do the kind of the daycare for the children. So we are working with them to provide the mental health to those children. So they already have the children in-house. We go to their organization and provide mental health groups to the children. So that's another way that we collaborate with other organizations. We also, when we have the possibility, we write grants together so that we do one part and another organization does another part. And then we work together into things like that. Or we can, for example, one of the clothing drives we did together with another organization that works with Venezuelans. And they were provide the volunteers, we provided the site so that we will get all the things and the clothing here, and their volunteers were sorting all the clothing that we have.
You've got a tough job, Diana, you and your team, you know, really meeting people where they're at when it's probably a very, very stressful time. One of the things we try to work on with the governor and with our congressional delegation is really pushing short-term work authorizations, at least how can we help step in as employers to provide pathways of employment as people are here, you know, whether it's their legal status or trying to find family, but trying to sort through America's very complicated legal system when it comes to immigration, especially, you know, as asylum seekers, they do have protected status for a period of time. That's one way I think we have tried, again, to bring in some employer community on that issue, because you're really, you know, on the ground floor of the people that you're seeing. What would be a memorable story or experience that sticks in your mind of someone that you and your team have been able to help?
So, you know, one of the stories that comes back to me is that we had these asylum seekers, a couple from Venezuela that came around a year and a half, 2 years ago. The wife was left out by ICE on her own recognizance. And she comes to us and she's like, my husband is detained. He needs medical help. And they're denying it. She was desperate. We spent around a day and a half trying to find out, he was in Texas, trying to find out who would be the person in charge of that medical place in Texas. We were able to find that out. We were able to provide that medical help in 24 hours. A couple of months later, he was finally released. And we tried to help them in all the processes of integration. So, you know, how does the system work? Where do you have to go? Things as simple as reading letters that they were receiving and translate to them. This means this or that. A year forward, he is working in the community. They put in already their asylum. They're waiting to hear. They got already their job permit. And here we are. We have a radio show where we put out in the community information about other organizations that are providing any type of resources. And we were talking about economic opportunities and how entrepreneurs can get some sort of loan, even if they don't have legal status. So we were talking with SETS, that is one of the organizations that provide those loans. And then I'm like, oh, these people may need that. So we call them and I told him, hey, I know that you're creating your company. Do you have the funding? And here, so I put them together with SETS, and he has already his own company. He is employing four people and he is very close to get the loan to get all the implements he needs for his business.
Wow.
Yeah. I am so proud of him and all what he has achieved. So
what's next for your organization as you think about the future, the next couple of years? What would you want some of our employers to know about what's next? And if they're interested in engaging with you, how could they do that?
One of the things that I see that is coming is once we figure out all these work permits for all the migrants or a big majority of the migrants that we have here, how do we provide them with jobs? And we see a lot of migrants that in their own countries, they were electricists or welders. But in their countries, they don't have a formal education on that. And here you need a license. So how do we provide access for them to that education so that they can get a license and they can start working right away in the skills that they already have? So I would like to see the development of something like that, that we could be a pipeline for the businesses. You know, like this is the license. And then once you have it, you go right away and you start working in this organization that is waiting for you to have the license. So I would love to develop that. And I would love to work with businesses to make the pipeline happen.
Yeah. And Diana, I can already think of a couple introductions for you in regard to that. Of employers here in Colorado that would probably welcome the chance to work with you. In fact, it's interesting. I think the electrician's license was just put into Spanish just a couple of years ago, which doesn't that sound funny in a way, like with the amount of population we have here in the West of Spanish speaking people, it just sounds funny to me that it took so long. But I think there's great strides in several different industry groups to try to bring in talent, you know, wherever they can find it. So would love to brainstorm more with you on that. So,
I think that there are a lot of areas of opportunities that we can develop, because I know for a fact that there are several industries where they are understaffed and they have issues getting people. So why don't get together with those organizations, see what type of training the people need and provide those training so that we can do the pipeline right away.
Absolutely. Well, that sounds like a whole nother reason for us to get together. I think we've only met on Zoom in the past, but yeah. Diana, tell us, what's your website again? We'll list it as well with the podcast, but let folks know how to find you.
Yeah. Our website is rockymountainwelcome.org.
Thank you so much for being on. I actually have two more quick questions for you that are unrelated. I do this sort of lightning round. But we'll make sure to share this podcast with our folks and let them know how they can engage with you to help people here in Colorado get plugged into the employer community. If you're willing, this is sort of our lightning round. So the first question is, what is your favorite place for sort of a powerhouse lunch or happy hour?
I don't have time for that.
Okay, so you're like TBD. Okay, I'll need to take you out for happy hour. Sounds like my favorite place.
Between job and small kids, it's all time to breathe.
That's true. My kids are grown, so maybe I wouldn't have thought of this question, 10 years ago.
I try to find immigrant-owned businesses to bring people. So, you know, I walk the walk.
Yeah. Do you have one that you'd recommend?
I do. There is one in the corner of our office. It's called Hira Coffee. It's an Ethiopian coffee shop that has also Ethiopian food and is fantastic. So that's in Aurora. They don't pay me to do this, but they are fantastic.
They can pay you in free coffee for a little while.
Yeah, no kidding.
And then Diana, to wrap this up, you've been, you know, you're such an interesting person also with your immigrant story, coming to Colorado, you know, attending DU, starting a family here, and now being a nonprofit leader. What's the best advice that you received that helped you to have the impact that you have today?
One of the books that I had to read, I think it was in college or after college, was The Four Agreements. And one of the agreements stick with me, and that is don't take anything personally. Mm-hmm. And I think as a leader in any type of business, if you don't take things personally, you get a long way because things don't get to you.
Yeah, that's great advice. I mean, I just wrote that down, the four agreements. I think I read that years ago, but it's worth another read. Diana Higuera with Rocky Mountain Welcome Center, thanks again for your time today. It's been a joy to talk to you and hear more about your impactful work.
Thank you for inviting me, and I'm looking forward to meeting with you in person and have coffee.
Absolutely. It's a date. It's a date. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in. This has been A Seat at the Table with Debbie Brown, and we'll see you next time.
A Seat at the Table with Debbie Brown is a production of the Colorado Business Roundtable. You can find this episode, a listing of our upcoming events, and more information about our organization at cobrt.com.